So things are reconfigured in here, and I'm not exactly sure why. I assume that there's acoustic reasoning behind this, and maybe maybe the stability of your home life. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, certainly.
But, have you been like in here with like a decibel mic and like monitoring, using mathematics to monitor acoustics?
It also kind of looks like Cheap Trick is moving in here. Maybe. Yes.
What is the actual purpose of this thing?
Or the people from Vans?
Like the world's largest checkered flag?
Yeah, it's a very large checkered flag.
This is our finish line, guys.
Oh, Mark says we're almost done.
This was just a major clean out last week.
So. Just the Janet barrier.
I thought it'd be kind of nice.
It is kind of nice.
It separates us from the laundry room.
So that way if she comes in and decides to do laundry, we won't pick up any of the audio.
Well,
I don't know about audio.
Mom, get out of here.
What I really thought would be interesting would be just to see how Ryan might respond to the fact that the table's turned. Literally, the table has been turned.
The table has been turned, but I'm dealing with it.
I wondered this.
You're like, it's all that to you.
I got my nap.
Okay.
All right.
I wondered the same thing, actually.
The same order here, so.
Yeah, we all found our spots. And I asked Shane when I walked in, because he's the only one sitting at the table, where do we all go, essentially? And he was like, yeah, I think you're over there. And I just gravitated to this spot. But
no, it's like when you're in junior high or something, you pick a seat on the first or second day.
That's your
seat. That's your seat the rest of the year.
Yeah, if you're going to be the wise ass in the back of the room who says, what was the old like, it was like a spade bit. It was like, I was never the guy, but I was like the guy behind the guy.
Was it
Bill Hicks?
Oh, it was Bill Maher.
Did you just say actually. Bill Davis?
Oh, God. It was like, I was never the guy who threw the clay. I was the guy who said to the guy who threw the clay.
Just makes me like that joke worse.
Why don't you go ahead and throw that clay. I think it'll make you very popular.
Yeah.
He was not political back then. He did jokes about, like, pretzels.
Yeah. That was times have changed. Anyway.
Pretzel jokes.
But, yeah. No, it looks good in here, Mark. Thanks, fine, guys. Fine work.
All right. Now that that's been established, I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Kevin.
Somebody likes it. Oh, shit, Mark. Did I just step on your line?
You stepped on my name.
Oh, sorry. Dude, why don't you just say your name one more time, and you can edit that in.
And I'm Mark.
And this is Somebody Likes It.
So one of the things that we had kicked around doing, and we haven't quite gotten to a little place where we'll share this yet, is taking a sidestep out of what we usually do and maybe doing a shorter, like, in-between show on music-related movies. And eventually, you guys have already seen Straight Outta Compton. Mark and I are going to – have you already seen it?
No.
Okay, so Mark and I will take a bullet on that, pun intended, sooner than later. And then hopefully while that movie's still out, we'll talk
about it. I was going to say, you need to catch up, dude, because, like...
Yeah, we'll do it this week.
But what I got thinking about, and the reason I'm bringing it up is, there's another one that I think actually might be more compelling, and that is the new Hank Williams Sr. biopic that is coming out.
Oh, I have not heard of this.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about this.
Yeah. Well, he's dead.
I'm aware of that.
Yeah, I think he's talking about the movie itself.
Oh, okay,
that's about to come
out. What was it? Something happened? Something happened? It's the SNL, Kennedy assassination. Yes. Bits from 20 years ago. Anyway, 30 maybe. But yeah, so I think maybe that's one we should noodle with too if we can get to it. I don't know how limited or full that release is, but it should be coming out soon.
I think that's a great idea, and we will ... get back to you on that.
Cool.
When and if it shows back up. Your album is this week.
Yeah, now, contrary to popular belief, I didn't actually record this album.
I'm sorry.
I just listened to it. I chose a record that seemed to be omnipresent circa 2002, 2003.
Three, I think it really hit over here.
The Doves, The Last Broadcast.
Well, it's not The Doves.
I corrected. It's Doves.
Doves.
Yeah.
Doves.
Doves, man.
Yeah. Anyway, and this was an album that when it came out seemed to be all over the place right away. And it also was one that I remember at the time, like, was really making the, like, it sounds like a festival circuit album, and it made a lot of the festivals, including, I think they were here for ACL that year. I'm not sure, but they were in Austin.
I saw them
either that or, or South By.
I think I saw them in 04, 03. That was the infamous show that I think I've mentioned. And not infamous to you guys, to me and Lars. No, we weren't blackout drunk.
The
one-eye
show.
What?
The one-eye show.
We were one-eye in it. Yeah, I had to hold up one hand in front of one-eye to keep them from separating.
Where
into,
did they play?
La Zona Rosa.
Yeah, see,
there were about 2,000 people there.
Yeah, I think I was going to go to that show, and I ended up not doing it. And I thought maybe I did, but I was conflating it.
Oh, Mike, that's the best story I've ever heard. Dude, I think I might have gone to that show, but now I'm pretty sure I didn't go to that show.
Well, in your version of it is you saw it through one eye.
What I was going to say is I thought for sure that I actually went to that show, but I conflated it with Las Vegas, who I saw at Emo's, which was kind of a similar-sounding band.
Kind of. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll get there. Given that they're both English bands.
Well, Las Vegas is Scottish, but
oh, okay.
From
well,
the UK.
At any rate. So yeah. So these guys were everywhere at a time when I had not been in. I'd been in Austin for 2 or 3 years at that point, but when the city was still reasonably new to me, and I remember at the time, like, I was like. You know, there were certain elements of this record that I thought were pretty compelling, but I, for whatever reason, never bought it. Like, I just never did.
You bought it for me.
That's like, probably what it was.
You
yeah.
gave it to me for, like, my birthday or something. And I listened to it a couple times, and then it kind of got lost in, like, the flotsam and jetsam in my backseat.
Well, there you go.
I think that's a good, I think that's a good, like, not analogy of this band in general, but that's sort of my experience, too. I just want to interject just for a second. The record that came up before this, Lost Souls, is one of my favorite records ever.
Darker.
It's darker. It's yeah. got, this is pretty dark, though, but, and I love this album. By the way, but I missed it. There were a couple of singles off it that I knew that I loved a lot. But yeah, sure. And I went and saw them at a sold out show and all this stuff. But I just never, I never bought the record or listened to it.
I wonder if this encapsulates your experience. I expected this band, like this record, sounds complete enough to me that I thought that every ensuing release. That these guys were going to continue
was going to go build, up and up and up,
and they were going to continue to build on their material. And I was like, if I don't catch it all right now, who cares? Because they'll be back here in 2 years with more great shit, and then I'll get to hear this again.
It's
anyway.
Exactly what I thought. Like, yeah. You know what? Why don't we listen to a song? Because I want to delve into what you just said because sure. I want to compare their careers with another band. And when we come back, we'll talk about that just a little
okay,
bit.
Okay, so. let's start with. Really, the biggest single was "There Goes the Fear."
And that's the one that I recognized.
Okay, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, that was "There Goes the Fear," which was their biggest
UK hit, right?
And here too. It's actually not one of my favorite songs on this album, but I think there's not a bad song on this album.
Oh,
personally.
I dig this song.
I don't think so either.
Yeah, I mean, I like it just fine, but there's some stuff that is just it's very ambitious, and they nail the ambition a lot. What I want to talk about for a second is kind of contrast their careers with another band that came from the UK. This album was released in April of 2002, went straight to number one on the UK charts. Never did anything better in the States. They never charted higher than 83.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, I know it is, and I
wouldn't have thought that if you'd asked.
I don't recall
me,
ever hearing them on the radio. I heard like music geek friends talk about them, but
they were on sort of heavy rotation on certain radio stations. But yeah, they didn't get that much radio play, and that's one of the things that's most interesting. Because, well, back up for just 1 second. So
who's the other band you're contrasting? Is it Coldplay?
Coldplay in August.
No, I can see that similar.
In August of that same year, Coldplay put out A Rush of Blood to the Head. Which is another, it's a pretty ambitious record.
Well, they have a lot in common with each other, just sort of.
They do.
Musically.
Right.
And if I was in Doves, I'd probably fucking hate Coldplay.
That's what I was saying. That's what I was thinking. Do you think that they envy their career just a little bit? That Rush of Blood to the Head went to number five on the U.S. charts. Of course, it went to number one on the U.K. charts. Chris Martin is a much better singer, but I mean, his voice is not for everybody.
Well, they're similar, but this guy can't sing as well.
No, but I was trying to think, and actually, I remember a couple of years ago thinking about this. What was it that made their careers just diverge so?
I'm sure it was just Gwyneth Paltrow.
Well, I don't. Yes, probably so. She broke up the band, marriage. They
it's a conscious uncoupling.
She consciously uncoupled.
uncoupled the two bands from each other. Yeah. Well, I mean, Coldplay. I mean, they had two things. They had Yellow, but I mean, Yellow was. I mean, they came out of nowhere when that song was a huge hit, just a couple of years before, and then they had Clocks, which was the monster hit that made A Rush of Blood to the Head. That song made Coldplay, not Yellow. Clocks
sure,
did.
Right.
But there are songs on this album, this Doves album, the last broadcast, like Pounding. That song is just as good of a single as Clocks.
Couldn't agree with you more.
It is a fucking home run.
Here's the thing. This is on a indie label, though, isn't it? Doves?
Astralwerks. Astralwerks at the time was distributed by a major, and I don't...
Well, which one came out first? Who had the
Doves.
First?
Doves. They came out by 4 months. They came out in the end of April, like April 26th of 2002.
Yeah.
And then Coldplay came out in August of 2002.
There's a thing like with like films. If there are two films in production that are racing to get released one before the other, and they're really similar, like the Truman Capote movies?
The first one wins. So, and here's another thing I was thinking. I was like, well, there's a lot of long songs on this record. But go look at – I went in and I compared that too. If you go look at the running times of the songs on Rush of Blood to the Head, I think 8 out of the 10 songs are 5 minutes plus. So it's not that. I mean, this is a more complex album for sure. But that Coldplay album, there's some dark – they kind of – You know, we're looking at this in hindsight, in retrospect, but they kind of changed popular music more toward this, like, not morose British idea, but...
To me, Coldplay writes songs that were designed to be played in soccer stadiums.
But now they do. Now they do. Those first two records are a lot different.
That's a fair counterpoint, I think, with regard to that other band.
For sure. As regard to Doves?
No, with Coldplay. Regard to Coldplay.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I do. Like, I think it's easy to, like, now we look at them through their current lens.
Yeah, the wannabe U2 thing.
Sure, sure.
I mean, Rush of Blood to the Head is not even arguably a louder, more anthemic record than Parachutes. But listen to the last broadcast. A lot of these songs are big anthemic
grandiose songs.
Yeah,
the word that.
So do you understand where the I'm so confused?
No, I think that's a really actually easy connection to make. Like I think that's a very natural connection to make. Here's one thing that I find myself wondering, and I don't know. Like I'll just cop to the fact that like I haven't researched this, so I don't really. I'm not 100% sure, but. I wonder if the guys in Doves are older than the guys in Coldplay, and I throw that out.
They are.
Significantly
older.
Yeah, so that's one of the things that I remember from hearing a super awkward Gwyneth Paltrow interview on Stern.
Which is everything?
Yeah.
Why would she go on Howard Stern?
Raise it up.
I don't. I'm sure she was... consciously.
I saw her on some PBS thing with Mario Batali, and I was like, oh, yeah, okay, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Howard Stern.
When they're driving around Spain.
Yeah. Well, and we won't go down. We're not going to sidebar on that. But the guy's, he's a really great interview, and he's like, and his audience is big. And so it's like, yeah, sometimes they get potpourri in there. Anyway, the point being that she talked about the one thing that I remember from her interview, because it was after, like, this was recent enough that it was after her divorce, that she talked about that when Coldplay got big, that Chris Martin was like 25. Like, he was really young. That whole band
was
really young.
They were young.
And they were really big and really young all at the same time. And so you contrast that with Doves, and, like, you know, these guys came up, like, originally were a band called Sub Sub.
They were a dance band.
Yeah, and it was like a different thing, and they had a number three hit in the UK.
Their debut
in the 90s.
In 93.
Yeah.
1993.
Right.
So that's like, what, 9 years before The Last Broadcast comes out.
Sure.
I think one of the most interesting things about this band, and I remember the first time I heard Last Souls, I was actually about to go on tour, and I was in a I just played an in-store here in Austin at the dearly departed 33 Degrees. I was packing my shit up, and the guy is playing this amazing album, and I hear about three songs, and I'm like, holy shit, who the fuck is this? And he's like, Doves. And so I buy it on the spot, and it becomes like the soundtrack of that tour and stuff. But he told me, he's like, yeah, dude, this band weren't even a band until a couple of years ago. They were DJs, and their studio caught on fire, and it burned, and it melted all their records.
I read about that today, yeah. And they just were like, well, you could either pack it in or just start anew.
Well, and the funny thing to me is, like, literally the physical act of all their shit burning down, they just that's when they decided to decided to change their sound,
just pick up, like, instruments and, well, rise from the ashes like a phoenix.
But that's the thing that made me have to buy this record, because if the rest of it was as good as what he was playing in the store that day, I was like, that makes me hate them, because you don't go from being DJ to writing some of this incredible
the best
music
songs of your generation.
Yeah, like, that doesn't happen.
You're not allowed to do that.
And so that's
be successful at both, you dicks.
That's maybe I should have a little schadenfreude because they did their career didn't achieve the apex that I thought it would, but I don't.
It was just really interesting. Like, I just thought that, like, I didn't know until I started digging into the background that fire had happened, and that they had, well, and the other thing was, is like, you hear them, like, or if you read about or catch an interview from that time, them talking about this record, one of the things that they say is, like, we came into it with a lot of confidence. And I was like, that's really interesting.
You can see that or hear that.
Yeah, for sure.
You can hear it. I mean, yeah, but you can't understand why.
All right. So, producer Mark, I have questions for you, but we'll sidebar those for a minute. And should we jump into another track?
Sure. Can we listen to Pounding?
Yeah, yeah.
Since Pounding, we were talking about.
Yeah, that's the next one that I've got.
I think that this song, I've loved it for a long time, and I was listening to it over and over and over again, listening to this record, just like, God, this is, it's a perfect, like, big, not to overuse this word, anthemic pop song. It's just, it's great. It's lovely.
It's a giant crescendo.
So
pounding rather than driving beat, which is not as compelling a title. But
no, it's
also
not.
Literal.
Yeah, maybe a little more literal. Yeah, while we were in the break listening to it, I was like, pounding.
Yeah, it's a rather unfortunate title in the States, at least.
Yeah.
You like how cosmopolitan I was when I just called it the States?
The States.
You did, yeah. Like, you know, like you're not
like
England.
You're an expat.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So I teased before we went into the song that producer Mark and I have known each other a long time. Not as long as Ryan and I, but a long time. And
that would be weird.
It would be weird.
If like he was like in the delivery room and met me before you did.
Yeah. Supplies. Anyway, he was just inventorying. But yeah. Anyway,
check one baby.
Yes, exactly. No, so the question I have is like, Mark, I feel like it was a lot of our mutual nerdery, like our mutual friend group, that were big fans of this record when it came out.
Community folks, wasn't it, back in the day?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Like, yeah, my question is like, do you remember any of that? Like, does any of that, like, I mean, not like, do you remember what that time was like? I just mean, do you have any recollection of like, sort of, I felt like this kind of blotted out the sun for just a little while. This record did.
I think I was completely oblivious to it.
Okay. That's interesting.
I didn't hear really anything about Doves until 2005, 2006. And that was past their
when I say apex, I mean, this album came out in 2002, and this is another thing, like when you were saying at the beginning of the show, you know, it was hitting in 2002, 2003. When I really remember listening to it was about a year after that, which shows a lot about the trajectory of how they were treated with radio. That's another thing too, like that has to have been a big reason why they didn't succeed as well as Coldplay did, is their radio department dropped the ball.
But like their songs are a little more, and I don't want to say busy because it has a negative connotation, but there's more going on than a typical Coldplay song.
Well, right, but
go ahead.
I'm just saying in relation to that, so we're talking about a single. Like there are at least two just ball out of the ballpark singles on this, and that song we just listened to, Pounding, I mean, that's not, there's, when you say busy, I know what you mean. They're ambitious. There's a lot. Yeah. They're sprawling.
There's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on, which makes sense. But if you're letting that album live or die just on merits of the album, but like that song as a single is as good as any single, or as big, potentially as big as any single that Coldplay or anybody from, you know, British from that period, or anywhere maybe from that period of time. I mean,
well, it probably is like their radio department kind of dropping the ball. I know for a fact.
I don't think they even released that song in the States as a single.
A lot of like radio departments of your, you know, mid-size indies to, you know, to majors, like they go out and they schmooze program directors. Like they go out and take them out to dinner. I mean, there's no rules against it. They can't pay them to play the thing, but they go out and, you know, buy them drinks.
And I know I'm not the only one that's worked in radio here, and it's not like you only get a few records a week from companies.
That's true.
Really,
stuff
to listen
well,
to,
but
so.
What I will say about that, well, with more volume becomes more clarity. Like, there's a lot of shit for every good thing, mm-hmm. a lot of shit, and so what I can only imagine is like if you're somebody who is like sort of the gatekeeper, and a lot of this stuff is coming in, and you're trying to determine, I don't know, whether something gets radio airplay, or whether they get booked for a festival or whatever. If you hear 20 bad bands that are vying for the same thing, and then something that seems present and, you know, steady and with purpose and inspired, like that's,
I feel like you would be like the man wandering in the desert, like that finds like a tiny bit of water.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I've been chasing UK bands that sound like this for a long time, and it's easy for me to run into them. There's always
For a little while, there was like a kind of unofficial competition going on for like who was going to be the next Radiohead. And Coldplay was definitely in the conversation. There was a band called Elbow. But, you know, I think
there was Travis.
That
was Shiny.
Suede.
This band is the closest in a lot of ways.
I think they sound like if Coldplay and, mid-period Radiohead or Radiohead when they started getting good, OK Computer era Radiohead, like, had a baby, you know, and kind of rocked a little more. I don't know. Anyway.
I just wanted to see where you were going to. Did you just say kind of rocked a little?
I haven't seen Ryan's analogy. Rocked a little.
Well, I mean, like, a Coldplay, it's like, this to me sounds a lot like if Coldplay just learned how to rock more. But it definitely is.
It's dark.
Certainly influenced by Radiohead.
Who wasn't, though, at that point?
If you had guitars
and you wanted to play something that wasn't like you were in a, like, a ska band. Like,
and if your studio melted down.
Well, and one thing that I will say is, like, so it seems like there's a pretty common refrain that where Shane, you alluded to this, where the first record was pretty dark, that they made a conscious effort, confidently, but they made a conscious effort to kind of flip the script with this one and write things that were intentionally more uplifting, but you can still hear some, in my opinion, you can still hear some of the dark places.
Oh, I think it's pretty dark. Yeah.
Yeah, but there are moments of whimsy.
Well, I don't necessarily know that whimsy or what we're talking about. Like, they just, that I think that some of the, my opinion is that some of the anthemic stuff comes from this, like, sort of, like, rising against the darkness type idea.
Like Star Wars.
Oh, yes, exactly. Just like Star Wars.
It sounds the same to me. While we're talking about whimsy.
Right out of my mouth. Yeah.
I figured so. Yeah, yeah. I figured that's where you were going. While we're talking about whimsy, let's play some intermission music.
This is definitely whimsical. I do have this week.
Yes, I know. All right. So
the song I've got is maybe could be interpreted as whimsical.
Whimsical? Well, okay, we'll do a few minutes with.
Welcome back from whimsical theme music for a few minutes with, and this week...
You're welcome.
Yes. This week, a few minutes is with Dandy Warhols. Specifically, well, Bohemian Like You.
Yeah, that's relatively whimsical.
Yeah, I'd say it's whimsical, and I'll get into my thoughts on it. I love this video so much, but I don't want to give.
You know,
too much
I think
away.
I saw this video like 20 years ago or something. Like,
this is why I brought out ye merry old Wikipedia. It was released in 2000, so 15 years ago.
Okay, well, it's on the closer to 20 years in than it is on 5 years.
That is true.
Just pointing that out for everyone.
Math.
Thank you, Chevy Chase.
Do we want to watch
Gerald Ford?
Yes. So what do you, Ryan, are you, we saw the Dandy Warhols live once.
We did. And we can talk about this on the other side.
I'm pretty sure you're going to want to, even though it's going to embarrass me.
Well, there's one thing I remember about it more than any other.
I know.
Yeah. Anyhow.
It doesn't have to do with him covering one eye.
Does not have to do anything to do with covering one eye. I wanted both eyes wide open.
All right. Now I want to know.
Well, why don't we first listen to Bohemian Like You by the Dandy Warhols.
Two things, really. One, I highly enjoy the Danny Warhols, like I just always have. Like we've, it's just never come up, but I just enjoy the shit out of
it. I don't
know
how they're not giant popular.
It's another band that, like, along the same lines as Doves, like how is this band not selling out
stadiums? Why doesn't the entire world have my musical taste?
Exactly. That's a full show.
Have you guys ever seen the movie Dig?
I have.
I only know, like, I've only seen the previews.
That's
for it,
the Danny Warhols versus Brian Jonestown Massacre,
which I still.
And you spent some time with Anton.
Spend some time with Anton. That's a whole other story. It's the best rock documentary, hands down. I don't care what people
highly
say
entertaining.
The Scorsese outtakes are
crazy.
It's insanity. Can I say one thing really quick? I've always loved the Danny Warhols. Great, great, great pop writers. I lived in Portland right around the time. They're from Portland, Oregon. Right around the time that this video.
Oh, they were considered uncool there, weren't they?
People hated them.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, what? Why are you being too?
That's
too
like if Austin turned on Spoon or something.
Similar, yeah. But you know the thing is that I think that things have kind of turned around for the Danny Warhols. In that, I mean, now they're sort of like elder statesmen. I think at the time, like, I think you know, Courtney.
That's a bad gig, by the way.
Courtney Taylor
was. He's a very attractive man, and I think that that probably had a lot to do.
He was like too good looking to be famous.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so I made my first point. My second point is that, and this sort of ties in, sort of directly ties into the video, which is that you win karaoke not on your voice but on style points. And that whole video is a testament to style points.
So here's another thing that I just want to point out, because I was there, like living there at this period of time, probably when this video was being shot. I love the fact that the whole video was karaoke, because that was like the big activity. That's what you did on weekends with like everybody. Like that's
so. Portland was pretty much like Fort Wayne, wouldn't you say, Ryan?
Different kind of karaoke. People in Fort Wayne thought they were going to get discovered. People in this video were just like trashed and having a blast.
And spraying Banaka into their mouth before they started making out with people that they didn't show up with.
Well, and you know, the only thing that I could think was like while I was watching all this was like they had to shoot so much more footage of all that crazy shit in order to cut it the way they cut it.
There's probably all kinds of great stuff on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, yeah. The outtakes of the disaster part of that karaoke video are amazing. But tell people like what it is for those who haven't seen it yet, but should.
So it's the band playing in like what looks like a living room or something, but everybody doing karaoke.
It's not a living room.
Like kind of an underground bar.
It's a bar.
Yeah. Okay, underground bar.
They all look like underground bars, dude.
Well, yeah.
Because there's the naked bartender.
Yeah, and there's alternate shots of like an either clothed or naked woman working on a car.
It starts out with people before they get to the bar that are like sitting outside of a house.
Yeah, well, you've got a great car.
Working on the car, dude.
Which, by the way, for the longest time, I thought it was, you've got a credit card. I swear, it was my, excuse me while I kiss this guy moment.
Now you're making
very thankful to have all the lyrics on the video.
No, that's so helpful. And like the video watching itself, you can karaoke to since you have the lyrics. It's very helpful.
Yeah, you don't have to like create your own.
It's a little bit of a self-help thing.
Yeah, but it's basically, you know, the song's kind of about like this sort of, I don't know, crazy off-the-grid lifestyle that people do where they get fucked up and they work service industry jobs and just kind of have fun and sleep around.
Yeah, it's not off the grid. It's called your 20s, dude.
Exactly.
I don't understand where that off the grid.
Well, I just mean off.
It's very prevalent.
Like out of.
Or your 40s in the case of you two guys.
Thanks for that.
Hey,
for
now.
That. He's kidding, Mom. anyway, but the vast majority of the video is taken up with people, like random people on the mic singing portions of the song who are very obviously not in the band. Also, some of them close, some of them not. Some of them making out with people, some of them not.
Yes. Yeah. That's a succinct summation of that video. Good job. Yeah. I want to know why, seeing as how this video is on the internet and not on like an FCC-regulated broadcast show, why we didn't get to see any of that mechanics.
Oh, yeah.
Nipples.
Well, I think YouTube has like, you know, corporate man policies about content that kind of thing. But no, they're not certainly forbidden by law. from showing up. But yeah, like that's why.
Goodness gracious!
Yeah, there's apparently in the uncensored version there's female nippleage and full male frontal nudity.
There was. So you saw it. You saw.
No, but I read about it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've seen this version.
Yeah, so did we. We just all watched that, Ryan.
Yeah, I watched it before now. Also,
okay. Never mind.
All right, let's keep on podcasting.
We'll get back into it. We ready to get back to doves? Let's do the doves. Not the doves.
Just
the
doves.
Just doves.
Let's do some doves.
Do doves. Talking about the doves.
Doves.
Doves. Damn it. God.
Get it together, man.
Apologies to the doves who have nothing to do with tonight's podcast. But anyway.
Lovely birds, though.
Yeah. Well, sure. All of them. Peace, whatever. Anyway, so so I did think it was really interesting that there was an Austin Chronicle, an effusive Austin Chronicle review of this record that's not online anymore. At the very least, it's not the URL that it used to be. But what subsists is a synopsis of like the highlight of what they wrote. Whoever wrote it, that's the other thing. Was it Raul?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I remember that review very well.
Okay.
I remember the first day I read that review.
There you go. Shane with the faraway gaze in his eyes. So Raul said he called this record a stunner, an infectious melancholy, ultimately euphoric barrage of sound wrapped in a sheeting of guitars and subtle effects that coalesce around frontman Jimmy Goodwin's plaintive voice and brothers Jez and Andy Williams' lovely, pounding, relentless vibe that echoes with hints of northern soul and terrifically big beats. How's that for hyperbole? Or is it hyperbole?
I don't know if it's hyperbole. I don't know. It's accurate. I don't know about this northern soul thing. Is he talking about northern England?
I think that he's talking somewhat. Somewhat. But remember the Verve album, Northern Soul. There is an idea. It's not like white voice soul. It's a different thing. It's a different idea.
Wasn't familiar with that term.
Idiom?
Idiom. Thank you.
And all I have is a snippet, so I don't have context, but I was like, there's a lot of praise in that, packed in that couple of couplets.
That couple of couplets?
Yeah. I guess that would be four sentences.
Can you say that like four times fast? Couple of couplets, couple of...
I don't know. Anyway, okay. But the point is
pretty riveting.
That is, frankly, like, I picked it because it was a snippet of something that was written locally, but also, like, it's kind of an example of a little bit of the over-the-top thing that happened, like the people who really connected with this
critic
record,
who is also the music editor of the Austin Chronicle,
Raul Hernandez,
tends to do a lot of flowery prose.
I wouldn't say that that's hyperbolic. I would say it's more he's writing superlatives.
Okay.
Yeah. Grand flourishes.
Yeah, well, and that's sort of appropriate for this record. Like, we use the term a lot on this podcast, swinging for the fences, and this whole record kind of is, but in a different way than we normally use it, where we talk about little tight pop songs.
I'm glad that you made a defining line between that, because, no, that's not – I mean, there are, like, home run singles on it, it's a massive album. It's ambitious.
It's more like they wanted to create a classic record.
But it's dark, and it's an LP, right. Yeah, I mean, that's a great way to put it, like a classic record, emphasis on record.
Like Radiohead had thrown down the gauntlet with OK Computer, mm-hmm. and – everybody else in England was like, oh, fuck, man. You know.
One of the things that I will say about this record that I think is kind of interesting is, like, I feel like there aren't, like, so I've been reading a lot about sort of the resurgence of vinyl, and I think that that's a potentially interesting thing, and we won't sidebar on that whole deal, but I do think that the difference between listening to records as a cohesive entire volume of work and as a
getting up from your beanbag chair to flip the thing over in the middle of it.
Well, not necessarily that, but I mean, like, the difference between that and, like,
I love how you just put a beanbag chair in everybody's house that has a record player, by the way.
Well, so, exactly.
That was fairly ubiquitous.
Your lava lamp
vinyl
or
was
a long time ago. Yeah. One era of vinyl.
Right.
It's the stringing together.
It's the difference between
it's a cohesive work.
It's the difference between a novel and a short story. Like we're not like the difference between looking at an album as an overall piece of work and picking singles. And I think that there are one of the interesting things about this album, I think, is that there are interludes. Like there are musical interludes.
Well, the first song on the thing is called Intro.
And that's all it is.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's called Intro. That's all it's meant to be.
Well, yeah. Well, and that's certainly true. One of the things that, like, as interludes go that I thought was particularly interesting was the track M62, which is, like, essentially a reinterpretation of a King Crimson track.
And it was right, I saw that.
And it was recorded, apparently, outside under an overpass from that highway.
Like, on the M62?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you know any more of that?
It doesn't sound like the things that surround it. And
let me just state for the record real quick. I don't know that I've ever heard a King Crimson song. And
I don't know any. Yeah, I've heard that name.
But having read much about King Crimson, I'm pretty sure I'm going to try to keep it that way for the rest of my life.
Well, it's not a...
Wait until the next producer, Mark.
Oh, see? Yeah, but...
So is King... let me just ask for those who are more in the know. Is King Crimson kind of in, like, the Frank Zappa?
No, I think they're more like prog rock, like the Anderson, yeah. Bruford, Wakeman, how like fantasy things in a little bit. And like Rob, is it
Dragons
Robert,
and Fairies and...
Robert Fripp is sort of like a...
You know, bass guitars with 24 strings, that type of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
God, that sounds awful.
Yep.
Anyway, point is like this is not necessarily make it a referendum on King Crimson if you like, but they chose to sort of reinterpret a King Crimson song under an overpass and then call it the name of that overpass. And so I think we ought to Slater Kinney right into it.
Yeah, let's do that.
I'm sorry to interject, but I'm pretty sure Slater Kinney is named for an off ramp.
They are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you know, kinship. There.
There you go.
Moonshine, waiting for a love that never comes. Moonshine, wishing for a time that never was. Waiting for a time, the truth to come. Waiting for a sign to show me all. Waiting for my love. Moonshine, drinking to a love that's gone on by.
I'll tell you, if King Crimson songs sound like that, I've been...
And you're turning right around.
Spinning my wheels for a little while, but I'm pretty sure they don't. Don't they have an album called, like, Hall of the Mountain King?
I don't know if there's an album, but there definitely is a song, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's all you need to know if you're me about whether or not you want to listen. If you want to listen.
It's the key part of that song.
Right. That's all you need to know if you're me.
I mean, it's not going to come from me and probably not Kevin, but you might be daring Mark to... make a move the next time he's in the...
There's definitely an itch that's been...
He got dared right then. But, you know, I don't care about that shit. I mean, me of all people, like, bring it on.
Yeah, you're a little bit of a sadomasochist.
It's just makes... It's fun.
Yeah. That's what... Scars are things to talk about later.
Look, all I'm saying is that...
Man, I heard a Bon Jovi song the other day, and it just took me right back to the experience.
Hey,
and
can
I wanted to hurt someone.
Can I say something?
Shane, actually. I wanted to hurt Shane.
Thank you. I'm honored. I just want to say one thing real quick, and that's just off of this record. But I've noticed that when I've heard songs by acts we've discussed on the show, even by some that I didn't like that much... I appreciate them more now. I heard a Bob Dylan song on the radio the other day that I did not like on Blood on the Tracks, but I understood it more having listened to it too.
I think that's actually a really great point that you bring up. Like, that's we get to sort of listen to these things with a different ear.
I think it like changes your brain a little bit to actually like go in.
Didn't you tell me you were in the grocery store one day and that crappy song that we take the snippet from? Shine. Yeah, Collective and you Soul. Were like just waiting. Yeah, wait, that Collective Soul song, just waiting for that little part.
Yeah. I don't. By the way, I didn't appreciate that any more than I ever did.
Did you holler it out when you were like you're doing the shopping cart dance in the aisle?
It probably depends on how drunk I was at the time in the store, but I at least did in my head while I was waiting for it.
I definitely did when I was in the car with Joel one day and came on the radio.
Do that for his birthday.
Yeah.
Just give him a Collective Soul themed birthday party.
Right.
That's what every 9-year-old wants.
I'm not exactly sure what that theme is.
Let's call it Squash Your Dreams at 9.
What are you guys' opinion of the song other than.
Which song? The Collective Soul song?
We just listened to.
Why I said.
Yeah, Shane.
I was saying,
that.
If like, that song is any indication of what I'm supposed to be expecting when I listen to King Crimson, then I'm going to have to reevaluate my opinion on
them. And what I will say, like, these guys, and like, clearly, this is a well-produced record, but however they set it up, the way that they put it out there to the public is that that song was recorded under an overpass on M62.
There's definitely at least some background noise from that. I mean,
it's pretty cool that they did that.
I don't think sitting underneath an overpass on the M62, you're going to get really kind of
quality. And nobody thought he was like screaming into a tape recorder.
Well, for whatever reason, to me, this is the most Tom Yorkish sounding song on the record.
I can see that.
Pardon me.
It's austere. Yeah. It's harrowing almost.
Yeah. Well, a lot of this record, the vocals kind of sound like Chris Martin light.
Oh, and I'm not talking about the.
No,
I'm not talking
raw.
About
this is.
I'm not talking about the vocals per se. I'm saying the sound of the actual songs. Like I see what you're saying vocal wise. This it has an austerity to it that OK Computer had, and you keep alluding to that, even though and that makes sense to me. Like the overarching dread.
So there were a bunch of bands as I listened to this over the last. Well, I guess it's been 2 weeks that we've been listening to it. But definitely Radiohead. Definitely. Coldplay, but also a little bit Oasis, a little bit Trash Can Sinatra's. There were a bunch of bands that were kind of in that mix.
There
that
are,
time.
But I gotta say, at the end of the day, my personal feelings on this band and on this record is they come out finishing it like they break the tape at the finish line. They just sound like Doves to me.
No, they do their own thing, but you can definitely hear influences, but they're not derivative, if that makes any sense.
No, I mean, that's a very nice way to put it.
Yeah, I'd agree. Okay, so one thing that I feel like is kind of interesting to bring up about this record is the time that it came out and sort of the world that we all lived in when it came out. And I think the song NY is maybe, like, it's not anthemic in that way, like, that it's intended to be, like, sort of a rah-rah song for New York. But I do feel like it's probably not a coincidence that it's on this album.
Since it was not that long after 9/11, is that what you're getting at?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean, at the very least, like, and, that, like, they don't approach it from that perspective at all. But I was like, I wonder, like, at the very least, like, it was a sort of heavy topic that,
I do think that song kicks ass.
Do we want to listen to 4 of this one? This time out?
I'd like to.
Sure.
We can listen to it.
Yeah, let's do it. I'm running out of town, moving on again. Everything they say is true. This city's insane. Every possibility, nothing's left a chance.
Don't
Yeah, probably after the like big single, this
Pounding?
Not Pounding.
The song, the single that was their biggest.
Yada yada yada.
Comes the fear.
Yeah, here comes the fear. This is the one that really grabbed me the most. And Kevin pointed out that it kind of has the loud, quiet, loud dynamic going on, which it definitely does.
Well, and I think that was omnipresent among bands that were being noticed at that time. So, for whatever that's worth.
Well, thank you, Pixies.
Exactly.
Thank you, Nirvana. And thank you for all the bands that picked up on that mantle and didn't make it suck.
Lots of great bands in between the years 1990 and 1997.
Can I share a tiny snippet from Pitchfork about that track, which I think is kind of cool?
I wish you would.
NY is exultant in its first verse, all crashing guitars and soaring vocals. The instrumental midsection is one of the band's finest moments, cut through with an unobtrusive string section and some surprisingly dynamic interplay. An example of which is, that's my whatever.
Parenthetical.
Yes. Let's go while we can. Put your finger on the map. Who cares where it lands? Sings Jez Williams as the song gathers steam behind him. It's one of several tracks that makes Last Broadcast a brighter and in some ways more accessible album than its predecessor. I don't know if that's true for you, Shane, but like I do feel like they tried to go to a brighter place.
It's a little bit brighter. It's still got a lot of darkness to it. I find that Lost Souls is a overall a more accessible record just because it has more succinct pop songs. But one thing that whoever that reviewer was hit the nail on the head is that there's a lot of instrumental interlude stuff within these songs.
They're sometimes arranged.
Yeah, exactly. And it's good.
Well, and what he did bring up, which we haven't talked about at all tonight, is any of the lyrical content, which as anybody who listens to this podcast, and as you guys certainly know, I don't really pay attention to unless it's particularly good or particularly bad.
But Shane,
I do. Yeah, I mean, these lyrics are great. This is a great record.
Well, there's so much to listen to instrumentally that like I just didn't get around to really paying attention to it that much lyrically.
They're one of those onion bands. Like the more you peel the onion, the more there is there. Yeah. You know, well, it rewards repeated listening.
Well, certainly.
And it's also one of these deals, too, where it's like I go back to the idea that they approached this record with a lot of confidence. And I think that, like, they executed it with confidence. And it's kind of like it's fun, even if it's fleeting, like, even if they don't sustain their trajectory of the whatever, the Coldplay model or some other model, like, it's fun to hear a band at the top of their game for as long as it lasts.
Well, and I feel like they were.
They were
here for sure.
I think so.
Then the album that they put out after this was really good too. But I mean, they put out a bunch of really good records and then just dropped off the map.
Well, and what I read about that was that like they were just like, well, we kind of decided that we were going to get off the put out a record tour carousel,
the roller coaster.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that we haven't mentioned is that two of these guys are twin brothers,
right?
Yeah, that's got to make for a fucked up dynamic.
Well, like, no, so you've got the Jesus Mary Chain, you've got Oasis, these guys, like, it is a fucked up dynamic.
Yeah, but those other guys that you just mentioned aren't twin brothers.
Not twin brothers,
These guys are twin brothers, so take that whatever fucked up dynamic they acknowledge.
No, that whole thing where you finish each other's sentences.
Make it squared.
Like,
like,
and maybe literally. In song.
What, squared? Or finish?
Well, no, you finish each other's sentences. Yeah. Oh, holy shit.
That was good. Good. Thank you, Mark.
My goodness. That's signifying that we're coming to the end of the show to the end of this segment. Kevin, that was great.
It was a great pick.
Yeah, thanks for picking that, man.
It's a record that I've wanted to sort of, like, I feel like I knew a little bit, but I really wanted to kind of rediscover, so thanks for letting me do that.
We're going to go into the next segment here in a second, but there was one other song you want to listen to, and we're gonna play out the show after the next segment with
we'll have an epigram, is it?
Epilogue.
Epilogue.
Yeah, not an epitaph either.
Epigram.
EpiPen?
Is that like something something somebody writes about you after you're dead?
Epidermis.
Like, I don't know.
What was that shit that you like women tried to like shave?
Oh, yeah. And they said it was
epilady.
Like...
Epilady?
Yeah, epilady. It was supposed to be not painful.
With an epilady.
Yeah.
Can we play whatever the next song
is? Yeah. So the next song,
It's your pick, right?
It is. In Current Affair, we're going to listen to Fool by Nadine Shaw.
That's tomorrow, and that is it for us today, and we will leave you with a... I can't do it. Okay. We'll do it live. Okay. No. We'll do it live! Fuck it! Do it live! I'll write it, and we'll do it live! Fucking thing sucks!
Upon your skin, so everyone will know it. And I guessed your favorites one by one, and oh, to your surprise, from Damnic Cave to Kerouac, they stood there side by side. You, my sweet, are a fool. You, my sweet, are plain and
So the question I have is, like, it appeared that one of the girls from a Robert Palmer video had been kidnapped into that that video. Did that happen?
I don't.
Not only that, but well, here's my take on it.
And I actually like the track. Like, I thought the track was cool, but I was like, where do I know her from? And I was like, oh yeah, I used
Susie
to see
the Banshees.
I saw 12 of you. Well, like,
here's what I think. PJ Harvey and Karen O.
And Susie Sue.
Susie Sue.
That's the one that makes me first.
And Chrissy Hynde had a child who grew up to be a singer. Got a time machine, went back and kidnapped a bunch of deadheads, put them in front of her show, and then they all joined a cult.
Yeah. Well, sure. As that happens.
Yeah.
My one thought was that I wouldn't get along with anybody that was in this video.
I suspect that might be the case.
The dude that's playing bass is from, and my computer died. Mark, you maybe look this up. He's from a band.
The future?
No, the opposite of that.
Sorry. Go
ahead. Past. Yeah. He's much older than her, and you can see this. And he actually has the only funny stuff in the whole video. Like, it cuts away. Like, the video is so, there's like this. I'm saying this off the air. There's this whole litany of UK bands that have great songs, but have these like stupid videos that are supposed to be clever and funny in some places, and just aren't.
You know, there's a fine line between stupid and clever.
Well, with a lot of these videos, like there are, and I'm using a lot of these grand sweeping gesture, like it's the disaffected protagonist. Like that sort of like the Elastica ideal.
Well,
like,
and so this is why the video doesn't totally bore me, is because the song is so basically the lyrics of the song, she's at a bar and she's being hit on by this guy, and she talks about she's basically saying like, stop talking about Kerouac and Nick Cave. And then, you know, like, it's annoying, and the chorus goes like, you know, you, my sweet, are a fool, you, my sweet, are plain and weak. And like, it's like one of these, it's really, it's very acerbic and cutting to me, which is why I think they tried to like keep it real stone-faced and then have that like stone-faced stupid dance party thing that they do in the middle of it. But the song is great. I mean, like,
no, I thought the song was cool.
The song is fantastic. And then, but I'm just don't know what's going on with the whole dance deal. Like, I mean, you've probably been to shows. I know you have, Shane, because you go to the folk festival every year, where like they do that weird hippie dance thing, and it just, I don't know.
No, this wasn't like a hippie dance. This is like a choreographed thing.
Well, at the end of it was.
Oh yeah, people dancing and
like
I thought I caught a glimpse of a hacky sack. Well, it's cool. It's a track I didn't know before, and Shane, thanks for trying.
Yeah, the song is cool.
The video is retarded, and I didn't.
No, well, the videos are fun to pick apart,
and I know it's a little retarded, NPC right now, but I do still enjoy that word, and I'm going to hang on to it as long as I can before it gets...
Before they come to take you away and put you in the special place.
Basically, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for listening to that song.
Oh, sure.
I thought you would, Ryan, that you would like
it.
The song. Like
I totally
did
it.
It's kind of in your wheelhouse, and yeah. Okay, so next week... It's my pick, and we will be listening to Stevie Wonder's Songs in the Key of Life.
I hear that's good.
I hear that he's relatively talented.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I guess I need to listen to find out for sure.
Sure.
I'm just going to hire him as my chauffeur.
Oh, he's blind, you
dick. Oh, crap.
Shit. It's like we're in like a bad, like at least for like 30 seconds
I wanted to like recreate like a Carol Burnett show moment.
This whole segment is a sad.
that was a really. Like, I just want to touch you real quick. Like, you landed that
Thanks.
One.
Thanks, man.
For those of you out there that are remember the Carol Burnett show, that was pretty good.
This whole segment is a sad trombone.
Yeah. Well, Kevin, are you gonna take us out on?
So. The upside to...
Well, you love this record so much that...
Well, the upside to talking about a record that had a lot of different songs that spoke to me that I think, like, it seems like we're all, like, at least remotely on the same page, that there were some fun things to share. There was one key track that we didn't get to, and it was Caught by the River. So why don't we go out on Caught by the River?
Sounds good, guys. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Hey, I'm Ryan.
I'm Shane.
I'm Kevin.
I'm Mark. So
it was like a backward kind of.
Well,
like,
we're all trying to figure it out because we've never done this before. But here's a little bit more of Doves or Doves.
Oh, you finally fell into that.
I know.
Caught by the River.
Son, what have you done? You're caught by the river. You're coming up.